And it's just a picture. It's a very familiar picture. Like that. So it's a perfect circle there. A hole in there. Like any mandala, it's a picture of our life. It's a picture especially of our spiritual life and our spiritual practice. In our order and movements, we have particular kinds of practices, but we also have particular stages of experience of the path, the Buddhist path. We think of those, or we're thinking of those in terms of five great stages or five great aspects, because you can talk about them in stages, because there is a sort of aspect of accumulation, things getting deeper and deeper. But at the same time, you can think of them as aspects, because actually there's bits of them happening all the time, and you sort of you have a little taste of different aspects as at different times. And a lot of you know this, what this is. And I'm doing it in the form of a mandala because it's like a picture of our inner life. And so with a mandala, you start in the east. The east is over here where the sun comes up. The sun comes up and it just pops its head over the horizon. And you just get a few shafts of light, don't you, coming in. And this structure we're talking about here is possibly something a bit like Stonehenge. Think of it like that, you know, the first light comes, maybe it's the solstice, you know, the first light the first day when the first longer day than the last one comes over, and you get this light in the east, and you come in here. This is the western quarter. That's the north up here. And this is the south. And this is the area. So there's a centre to this. There's a centre to this. It's perfectly in the middle of the perfect circle. And there's kind of four areas, really, around this central bit. And if you see these Tibetan-style mandalas, they're always coloured, aren't they? From fantastic colours, you know, this is usually blue, this is usually yellow, this is usually deep red, and this is usually deep green. And they're associated with different Buddhas and all that. But I'm not going to go into that so much today. But it's the mandala of our spiritual life, our spiritual practice. So in the centre of it, I better draw this bit. Well, in the centre of it, of course, you've got the Buddha sitting in meditation. So that's what you encounter. You come into the mandala, you come into this kind of temple, a bit like a temple, or a bit like maybe Stonehenge, or some sort of mythical structure. And the first thing that you practice when you come along is usually mindfulness of breathing practice. And it's the kind of practice where you are bringing yourself together. It's integration. It's the part of your practice where you're learning to knit the mind together and make it unified somehow. You're sort of getting it together. There's a sort of emphasis on integration, and it's something we probably need to do an awful lot. You know, it's a bit like waking up first thing in the morning. You know, it's a bit like the cup of tea or cup of coffee or whatever you do. I mean, when I came along quite early this morning, I noticed people looking really rough. On the bus, drinking this Red Bull stuff. I thought, I thought, wow, you must feel, you know, to resort to that first thing in the morning, you must really need to get yourself together. And that's integration. The first stage of a spiritual life, if you could call it that. Integration. And, you know, it's connected with the mindfulness of breathing practice because in that practice you put your attention on the breath and you keep doing that. You keep coming back to that sensation, that actual experience, and not wandering off into thoughts about the breath, but trying to keep coming back to the sensation of the breath. And that very simple activity has the effect of knitting it all together in ways that you can't describe, you know, but it happens, doesn't it? There's a sort of knitting together. There's integration, coming together. And in a way, that's the basis of our practice. And it's not only mindfulness of breathing, it's mindfulness of, you know, our whole Dharma life. So you're trying to knit things together in all kinds of ways. It's not just limited to that meditation practice, that's what I mean. So there's a principle here of integration. And, you know, as we first start coming along, it's probably the main thing we do. I mean, some people really get off on the metta bhavana practice, which actually also has an aspect of integration, doesn't it? The metta bhavana practice. I think a smaller number of people are usually drawn to that most, and it's because for them they're probably more in touch with their emotional lives, or they can see that it's something really so important that they need to get in touch with it, and it's that they put at the centre of their kind of integration. They integrate themselves through the emotional side. That's a little bit more unusual, but some people do it that way. But generally, everybody needs to incorporate that positive emotional aspect of practice. You know, sooner or later, they need to come into the southern part of the mandala, which generally we can call it positive emotion. Yeah? Positive emotion. And this is the point in your spiritual practice where the sun, it's the southern quarter of the mandala, so it's warm. It's a bit like a south-facing garden. You know, when you get into this part, the sun is not just spilling over the horizon, it's not just a horrible grey dawn where you're just about, you know, you really need that cup of tea to wake up. It's the day has started, it's like now, you know, this time of day, and it's going towards midday, and everything is happening now, you know. The energy is up and out, and the sun is up, and it's the time when everything is maturing and ripening. So I think the sun here symbolises maturing. The sun is what brings out the fruit, and it ripens the fruit on the vine. You know, we've got those grapes out there, you know, they've all been in the sun, and they've all ripened. And in a way, this is the area where our practice ripens, and becomes, you could say, like a fruit becomes sweeter, you know, it gets its real flavour, comes out that way. And so, of course, it's the development of empathy, you know, development of just awareness of other people. The awareness is not just coming together so that I can get on with my work sort of thing. It's coming together and becoming aware of others and everything that comes out of that. All the ethical practice that we do, for example, you know, that like noticing all the harm that you can do and do to other people and trying to not do that, trying not to make such a mess of relationships with other people, all the ethical precepts that we practice. all comes out of that basic empathy, that basic realization that other people actually exist, and what we do actually affects them. Mm-hmm. So in this quarter of the mandala also, it's positive emotion, but it's also skillfulness, a skillful intention. I'm going to write that bit down as well. I've written the words, for those who can't see, I've written the words skillful intention, okay? Intent E on. So it's ethics, yeah? It's ethics, the precepts. In a way, this part of the mandala, this part of the temple is very much what we do mostly at the Buddhist centre. You know, it's a sort of teaching, a sort of practice we're introduced to here at the centre. And I think also you get a bit of reflection as well, you get a reflection on the Dharma. In other words, you learn a bit more about the deeper teachings, the teachings of impermanence, the teachings of conditionality, the teachings that lead you to think that reality is actually something we radically don't understand, and that spiritual practice can bring an understanding of, and can even you start realizing, maybe you do a puja and you recite something like the Heart Sutra, you start realizing that there is a radical aspect of the transformation that comes about through Dharma practice. So, Dharma study, some of our Dharma study will take us in that direction. So you're already starting to reflect, even in the sunny, maturing quarter of the mandala. The day progresses, the sun, especially at this time of year, comes over here quite early, actually. It comes over to the west quite early. During the summer, it's like it takes ages to get to this point of nightfall in the west. But this time of year, well, it's 4 or 5 o'clock, something like that, isn't it? Parks close, you know, early. Now this quarter of the mandala is associated with what we call spiritual death. You're getting towards the more mysterious and dark aspects of spiritual practice. So some of the reflection we're doing here, you start to realize that I, that me, myself, is something I radically don't understand. And it's something that doesn't exist in the way that I always assume it has existed. And that's true for everybody. You start to realize that this thing I call myself, and this world which seems to consist of very concrete, definite things, is actually not like that. And actually the world is something much more made up by our own assumptions and our own habits. Our own habitual ways of looking at the world actually constructs the world we experience. And all this sort of reflection leads towards this place of nightfall. You know, and this can be, I call it spiritual death, it's a very dramatic term. It's a kind of a collapse of our assumptions. I think collapse is quite a good word. I'm going to put it in brackets. So this is the point where the sun goes down, and you get this beautiful, probably get this beautiful sunset, all these beautiful peachy, orangey, dark red colours in the sky. And then the sun just goes. The sun just drops below the horizon, and it's dark. It's dark. There's no light. The light goes because our practice shifts into this area where it sort of can't be controlled. It can't be. It can't be. It's not about developing. You've already done all this practice here, but here the practice is much more about the result of all that effort that you've put in. So in a way, when the sun, the symbolic sun, we're talking symbolically here, right? The symbolic sun dips below the horizon. You're starting to experience the results of your practice, the way it goes, as it were, underground or unconscious, you could say. And I think all of us have these little experiences of insight, various kinds of insight experiences, there's a whole range of them. They all involve some sort of a collapse of assumptions. Everything just goes fut somehow. And you're sort of left thinking, well, I really actually didn't understand this at all. You're left with that somehow. And sort of, as a sort of illumination comes out of that. And then going into this quarter of the mandala, which we associate with this, the term is spiritual rebirth. This is like midnight. This is like the midnight sky. And here, this is post the collapse. This is after the collapse. The collapse is a stage, if you like. It's post that. It's post the Heart Sutra, where it says there's no eye, there's no ear, there's no nose. Nothing is like you expect it to be. Nothing is like you assume it is, actually. This is post that. This is the experience of the positive reality that's behind that facade, if you like. You could look at it like that. The spiritual rebirth is more like the positive realization that comes out of that collapse. So there's just a little picture. I'm going to fill it in a little bit more. But I think we're looking here at a model, a spatial model, a mythical model, if you like, of our whole spiritual life. And I think some people have this sort of experience, the collapse type experience, before they even start. And so that's quite common. You have some sort of experience, oh, my life is just fallen apart. I think I'll go and learn how to meditate. Quite often people come in on that sort of basis, and that's a very good way to come in to it. And then they practice more integrative type of practice and practice more empathic, warming, positive emotion type of practice. And then still there's this mystery of the collapse. And I think out of this more and more comes the kind of illumination that is really this spiritual rebirth aspect of it. Don't expect me to be totally clear. I can't explain some of these things, because when you get into the dark half of the mandala, the bit of the mandala that's below the horizon, you can't really explain it very well. But I think we all have some sort of intuition of these sort of experiences. Mindfulness of breathing is usually associated with integration. Metta bhavana is kind of associated with positive emotion. Insight, vipassana type of practices are kind of associated here. Practices of reflection on, not just reflection, but direct seeing of impermanence. Direct seeing of the empty nature of the elements of our experience, for example. That kind of practice. I'll just put the word vipassana, and I hope you that sums it up for you. Vipassana type of practice. the spiritual rebirth, you can associate that with sort of imagination of the Buddha type of practice, where you contemplate an image of the Buddha. I'll write that down. And that's the often called sadhana practice. Image, imagination of Buddha. But I think I've already let you know that we're really talking about the spiritual principles. So the particular practices that either bring these out or which enhance these experiences can be any practice. You know, it could be the mindfulness of breathing here as well. You know, it could be the mindfulness of breathing here as well. All the practices can bring you into these kind of experiences. At the centre of the mandala, I mean, you come in to the temple or the Stonehenge or whatever it is, and actually there's the Buddha at the centre because it's the Buddha's mandala. You're coming under the influence, if you like, of the Buddha's tradition, or the Buddha's influence. Like we do coming along to a Buddhist centre like this, it's kind of pervaded by the atmosphere that has come down from the Buddha's experience 2,500 years ago. It's like that with any Buddhist centre. It's probably like that around any Buddhist. You could put it like that. You know, it's just an influence. You come into that mandala, and in a way, this is also a spiritual principle. You could say it's the basic practice of awareness or mindfulness. That basic practice of awareness or mindfulness is basic to all our practices. Mindfulness of breathing, metta bhavana, you name it. It basically comes down to that spiritual receptivity and just opening, if you like, to what's there, which is mindfulness. You can call it mindfulness. There's a whole load of teachings around mindfulness, Satipatthana Sutta and so on, but also just sitting practice, where you simply are receptive. You're simply receptive and open to what's happening right now. Okay, mindfulness of breathing. M-O-B. Metta bhavana. And the, what you call the brahmaviharas, you know, compassion, mudita and so on. Metta. Here is vipassana. Impermanence. Emptiness. That kind of thing. And here, sadhana, imagination of the Buddha. This is a more difficult area to characterize in terms of particular practices, because it's like whatever practice brings down into you the influence of the awakened mind. That's what this bit is all about. That has come through. It's enabled to come through because there's some sort of breakdown. The breakdown induces a new depth of openness, and because of that, something comes through. It's a bit like it's midnight, but it's one of those really clear nights where you can see all the stars. You can see all the stars. There's a depth, there's an incredible depth of space, and you've got these kind of twinkly points of light, and somehow you can feel their mysterious influence in the middle of the night. Even though you're in bed asleep, you're lying in bed, you know what it's like outside. It's a crystal clear night, and there's something coming through from the dark side of the mandala. Okay, so do you get a picture there? I hope you get some kind of picture. I hope it's a meaningful picture of what you're up to, in a way, in your practice. That's really what I want to try and convey, because I think we're all involved in this, really. We dip into these different areas at different parts of our lives. We spend most of our spiritual, most of our energy probably in this daytime quarter of the mandala, but there are these other aspects of the mandala which actually are very important to us, and which actually our daytime practice is having an effect on, I would say. I don't know if you can formulate any questions, but I was thinking of having a question session a bit later on and having a meditation first, but I could probably take a couple of questions of clarification right now. I realise it's quite a lot to take in.
So it's, you're saying it's sort of linear, that it could be happening all the time anyway.
Yes.
And then in the middle, is that happening all the time, or is that does it go spiral then?
That's more like the central principle is the Buddha, in a way. It's not just the Buddha as a person, it's the Buddha's awakening. It's because we have that potential for awakening, and the whole practice is around activating that. So that potential is there all the time, and it comes out in us to different degrees at different times, depending on how we practice, really. I think it's normal to alternate between sort of reflection and... I didn't quite understand what you meant.
I don't know whether I'm seeing the midnight part of it, it's like the dark night of the soul. Is it normal to alternate between the kind of metaphors and the...
People do all kinds of things. People do all kinds of things. I mean, here, in this part of the... You might be the sort of person who has deep experiences of dhyana. Might have deep experiences of, higher states of consciousness in meditation. And that might lead you to a quite deep experience of insight, of this collapse. And that might even be quite a difficult. A collapse is not something that is easy. There's a big element of conflict and difficulty. And what is going on with me? What is happening to me? Who am I? Who am I? What was I? What have I been? What have I been doing? There's elements of difficulty and conflict there. Which you could call this disintegration. You could call this integration, disintegration, and a kind of reintegration happening here. That'd be another way of looking at the kind of processes we're talking about. So I think you might alternate quite a bit. You might oscillate between one and the other. Yeah.
With the meditation practice, is it more helpful to concentrate, either on the mindfulness of breathing or, I suppose what I'm asking is, would it be more helpful to have a period of time, let's say a month or 2 months, just practicing the mindfulness of breathing rather than mix and match?
You might do that. You might decide to do that. Why not? Yeah. I think what's important is, as you come into the sangha, you form relationships with peers, people who are also doing what you're trying to do. That to some extent, at least, you want to be able to share the practice. And again, I think the kind of material I'm presenting here gives us some language we can talk about our practice with. And then you can get more of a sense about what's appropriate for you to do, because you can consult with others, you can have a bit of feedback with other people as to what... in the end, you know, it's your mind, it's your life. You have to decide. But I think some sort of feedback system between us as people, as a sangha, as people practicing these teachings, we learn from others' experience as well as our own. So that way, you can get a sense of what's appropriate. But yeah, I think it can be quite good at times to you know, to do a lot of one particular practice and have a deeper experience of it in that way. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But right, it depends on all kinds of factors, and I don't know you at all. You know. Yeah. Sometimes you can have an idea like that, and it's just an idea. Oh, I'll go and do this, and it's completely disconnected from a real experience of oneself, and it's completely disconnected from what other people might see and know you. But maybe that's a bit inevitable sometimes if you don't know many people. It's all very complicated. But I think here in this group, in this class, you do have people who you're getting to know and people who are getting a sense of. And through your connections with them, you're getting a sense of how your practice is going. That's very important. There's a hand. You can see it. Yeah.
It's Nigel. It's a very personal question. I've only been coming with a very relatively short period of time, say 6 months, and very quickly moved into the lower quadrant, which is the metta bhavana, which I feel very comfortable with. I'm not sure if I want to move out of there. Because it's a nice place to be. However, within me, there is the desire to learn. Because the next phase in that cycle looks quite a challenging place to be. But I'm not quite sure how I make that next step.
I don't think you really need to think like that. In a way, I think it's happening naturally. And I think you just... I think you have some sense of what this is about. And I think you can almost rely on it deepening naturally in that way. I mean, I don't believe you don't have any experience of these two areas, you know. If you've been alive, you know, for as long as you have, I mean, you have, you know. Yeah. You know. Yeah. I don't think anyone has to think that this is some kind of career path, you know. You know, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's just coming into relationship with the teachings and with the influence of the Buddha and what that is all about, and just learning what that is all about. Yeah, you can't make any... Well, I was going to say you can't make any of this happen. That's not really true, because in this quarter of the mandala, you're doing precisely that. You're making things happen. You're actively cultivating particular states of mind. But the result of that, it's not so, you don't have control over the results, you only have control over what you're doing. You have, from your experience, you have a certain trust that the results are going to be good results. But the actual form of the results is going to be unexpected. And that's where this collapse aspect comes in. You cannot know, by definition, what it's going to be like.
Can I ask a very practical question related to that? Is that a number of people I know, and I've had some experience of this myself, is that things are going very well. You're experiencing very deep, rich experiences in meditation, and then something happens. And it's like a sort of, you know, a collapse. It might be you're on a solitary retreat or something of that kind. And what arises actually can be really terrifying.
It can be difficult,
Terrifying, or can lead to a sense of desolation. So the practical question is, you're on retreat and this sort of thing happens. Any recommendations as to what to do?
Well, just tell yourself, well, you can manage this. Tell yourself that it's not surprising, something like this might happen. Tell yourself it's not the end. It doesn't mean you have to give up your practice, even though it might look a bit like that. Take it easy. Don't run away from it. See it as a blessing. See it as a fruit of your practice rather than a disaster. That sort of thing. We're not there. The person is on their own. We can't tell them that. So this is us we're talking about. It's talking about ourselves. And the thing about that kind of experience, it's never predictable. We talk about it now, and we've all got an idea in our head about what that might be like, but actually it is never like that. It is always a surprise, almost by definition. So that's the nature of it. It cannot be predicted. It doesn't have to be a horrible experience either. It can be a kind of illuminating experience. It can be a deeply beautiful experience. But there's still that aspect of collapse, I think. It can be a very beautiful experience, but there's still that aspect of collapse. You talk like this a lot and you start getting scared of your meditation, and what's going to happen next? Something awful is going to happen. Well, we just have to see. It's not actually a bad thing. It's part of the creative process. You can look at it like that as well, you know.
I think also it's back to something you mentioned earlier on about untapping that potential. It's about going deeper into the possibilities and the potential.
Yes.
I think it's something that Huxley wrote from the primordial philosophy. I think he used a phrase of progressive realization of latent potentiality. And it's realizing that latency and that potentiality and just actually embrace it.
Yeah. It's latent, yeah. Yeah. Mike?
I just wondered whether the words, less threatening, the words letting go.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, letting go, yeah. Yeah. Collapse sort of indicates that the subject as well is going to be, in a way, destroyed, to use dramatic language. If you talk about letting go, it sounds like you remain the same, and all this horrible stuff just disappears into the abyss. So the language of letting go is slightly less radical. But, you know. Yes, yes, I know. It's just words. Whatever, I try and choose words which have the right effect, but they never do. They can't, but almost by definition, you know. It's almost as though you can't really communicate. It's all happening in other people's minds. You know, they're putting it all together, you know. So I hope it's useful.